Hi, folks. Welcome back to another one of our political chats. Things are moving. There's a lot in progress at the moment. You can feel the tectonic plates shifting and new possibilities are being born. I love to see it because... Of course,
when you say tectonic plate shifting, you basically mean the ice is breaking under Nigel Farage.
Yes, actually, that's definitely what's happening. In fact, that's a good place to start, is here. As you can see, More in Common have this week's polling intentions and Reform down by 5.
Wow. And a difference between the Conservatives of just 3 points.
And Labour of just 4 points.
That is incredible. I mean,
Vase is going.
An easy prediction to make at this point, but the next election is going to end up with a coalition of the Conservatives and Reform, and the election after that is going to be a two-way battle between the Greens and Restore.
Yeah, and it's not even clear who the senior partner will be.
No, it's not.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Right.
And how funny would it be if it's Kemi Badenoch and Nigel Farage has to sit under her?
I mean, genuinely hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, he'd probably quit, but...
Sure, yeah, I don't think he'd do it. It'd be too humiliating. But as you can see, from the previous week, Reform were on 30%. So,
well, this one isn't bad. This poll isn't too bad.
Well, that's from the 7th of April.
Oh, that's a week ago.
So okay. That's a week ago.
Yeah. Right.
So in a week, according to More in Common, this is just the same pollster.
Right.
As far as they're concerned, Reform have lost 5 points.
In a week.
In a week. But the Conservatives only gained 3. I mean, that's something, but that's not that much, right? And as you can see mapped out, that was then.
This was a week ago.
This is...
Strong result. Okay.
So you can see the complete shattering. Reform 200, Conservatives 145, Labour 113.
So that would be a coalition.
It would have to be. But yeah, so that would be a majority.
Yep.
So that 5 points is Nigel being Prime Minister or not. Right. By quite a long margin.
But he spent the whole last week really doubling down on the triple lock pension.
Yeah, on everything.
But for basically people who were already going to vote for him anyway.
Well, if he'd watched last week's episode of this, he'd realise that actually the boomers are not the only people in the country who vote.
No, they're not.
No. They are a large voting bloc.
They are the largest.
Wrong.
Yep.
But there are something like 35 million voters, and they're 13 of them, 13 million of them. So just saying.
And how to put this sensitively, the boomers are a wasting asset.
There is an attrition rate there.
Yes.
It's not present in the other demographics. That's correct. Anyway, so yeah, like I said, that's a massive shift, right? 5 points in a week on this one poll. But you say, well, it's just one poll, and don't get me wrong, we know. But as we covered last week, they were on 25%. Where is it? About there. 25%. Well, now they're on 24%.
And we called this out from the start.
We did. Everyone is catching up to us. I mean, we called this out.
Yep.
When we were looking at the sort of like this dip here, we were like, oh no, this is bad. This is going in the wrong direction. Because for us, it looks like the upper ceiling of Reform should have been about 40%. Right? Nigel Farage, on his own personal attraction, should have been possibly like 15, 20%. And then you add another sort of 10% of really disgruntled right-wing people. And then you get the sort of mid-types who are like, oh no, God, everything's going badly.
All he had to do was make it look like it was inevitable that the Conservatives were going extinct. And that wouldn't have been difficult to do.
Yeah,
but instead...
Especially back here.
Yeah.
Back in May 2025. Yes.
But instead, all he's done is made it inevitable that Reform are going to decline.
Yes. And you can see the Conservatives haven't really been benefiting that highly from his decline. I mean, the benefit's a little, but like still just.
But they're in the race. I mean,
they are. But they've gone from like, you know, the low of 17 up to now their new high under Kemi Badenoch.
They were walking wounded not so long ago.
Sure, but 19.
And now they're in contention to lead the coalition that will come out the other side of the election.
When Boris won, he was on 52. Just worth remembering.
I mean, there has to be some cost for betraying the country so completely and doing the Boris wave.
I don't. Can I get? I think it was 52. It's on. It was really high. Yeah, there we go.
Wow, 50.
51%. Sorry.
Wow.
Yeah, high 51%. So that is just cataclysmic, right?
I mean, to be fair, he did bring in whatever it was, 4 or 5 million. Completely incompatible people who have launched a crime wave on this country, and now you can't go for a walk in certain parts of the country without getting stabbed or your daughter raped.
Yeah, I mean, it was a mistake. Did you see that viral video that went around from the BBC the other day But they'd found a black guy sat outside the Savoy in Swindon. And so they're like, great, what do you think about immigration? And he's just like, well, and he's got like an English accent, you know, so like a Southwestern English accent. So, you know what? I hate immigration. This country's going to the dogs. I can't believe it. And it went viral because you know that the BBC were like, finally, an ethnic minority. He'll be in favor of immigration. It's like, look, not all of them came in the Boris wave.
Yes.
Like a lot of them came long before the Boris wave and liked England as it was and were happy to be like the only minority in the village. Yes. Right now.
Well, and his grandson is the most likely demographic to get stabbed by the new arrivals.
Absolutely. Anyway, so getting back to this, as you can see, like we're saying, yeah, the Conservatives have gone from 17% to 19%. But yes, when put in perspective of only six years, that is I mean, if that were mine, I'd be like, oh God.
Yeah.
And you can see the rise of reform. You can see where Farage jumps back in, where it's about here. So
look at that rise from reform.
Yeah, it's a pretty strong rise, and it correlates with Labour and Conservatives going down. But is it the entire gap that's been left by this? That's the question. The answer is probably no, right?
No.
Anyway,
well, the other line that's shooting up is the Greens there. To be fair, the
that's a lot of
spectacularly as well.
Yeah, that's a lot of Labour's. I mean, Farage has captured a lot of Labour support and a lot of Tory support.
But this is the thing that annoys me about when people say, "Oh, Restore isn't going to get anywhere." Just look at the history of Reform and Greens. Yeah. You can come from next to nothing. You can come from below 5% and take it all.
Yeah. So Reform will last at say 5%. We'll go for in was it March 2023? So
three years ago.
Yeah, exactly. We're still 3 years out from the election.
Yeah.
We'll be fine, right? And then you just look at that curve, though. That is gutting. That is just gutting for Farage. Like, how have you screwed this up, mate? Like, you should have been around sort of here, right? Around this area, easily, comfortably, by never counter-signaling your own base. I mean, like...
You can't do that.
Yeah. All you have to do is just not counter-signal your own supporters.
Yes.
Right? I mean, look at Trump at the moment. Trump is tanking because he's like, oh, I'm at war with Tucker Carlson and Marjorie Taylor Greene and all of my most hardcore supporters for the last 10 years.
Yes.
So what are you doing?
He has carefully looked at his base. He's drawn the dividing line and attacked the more popular half of it. And he's drilling holes in the bottom of his own bloody boat. Nigel Farage is doing the same. And the thing is, it's painful watching Trump do it because we are Trump supporters.
Absolutely.
But we've seen Nigel Farage do this for the last 2 or 3 years, attacking his own support base, and we know how it goes. It doesn't work out.
Yes. It couldn't be said better.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like Trump has genuinely had someone like mind, like take over his
squid.
Own
squid. Yeah, squid has been attached.
Yeah, exactly. And so now he's just insane from the standards of like, you know, any other period of Trump's presidencies. Anyway, so the point being, we know how attacking your own base goes, and it goes badly, and that is just a brutal curve for Farage, down to 24%, as I look. What can he do to recover this? And the answer is, well, not really very much, right?
I mean, it would certainly help if he stopped attacking his own support base.
It would.
But the thing is, they're not his support base anymore, because they've walked.
Exactly. And what would really help is not cramming his party full of Tories. Right, that really wouldn't...
Amongst other groups.
And the Boris wave itself.
Yes. Right?
We'll come on to all of that in a minute. Right? Because it really is, Nigel Farage has hoisted his own petard here, and it's really not helping him out. But you'll notice, what's that at the bottom there on 4%?
Oh, an RB.
Yeah, that's right. Restore Britain commissioned a couple of polls themselves where when they were prompted, they were at 7 and 8%. So they averaged at 6% because when unprompted, they end up at 4%. So when you're unprompted, you have to click on other and then you have to type in the party that you want, which shows that not only does this have legs, I mean, Farage's prediction of, oh, you'll only get 1%, well, that's already wrong.
Right, yeah.
And it only takes 5% to absolutely tank you and make sure you're not the Prime Minister. So why did you leave such a vulnerable flank unguarded, Nigel? Because now you're literally getting stabbed in it. So
he was shooting holes in the flank.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, exactly. You thought you could just crush it. Well, it turns out you actually can't. We'll go back to the 1 year one, actually, because there we go. As you can see there, Restore Britain are now making an impact in the polls, and that's where we want to be. So these are the organic polls at 4%. In fact, let's get on to that. So here we are again, unprompted by YouGov, Restore Britain, a solid 4%, which is not a bad place to start, considering it's, what, a month old?
Mm.
Something like that. So it shows that it's really got some legs. So what's Farage doing? Well, he's like, oh, yeah. I mean, Shabana Mahmood is attacking the right from the right through her actions, right? Whether you like Labour and Shabana Mahmood or not, she's a very right-wing Home Secretary.
Oh, she's more right-wing than any Tory.
Absolutely. And we'll get on to exactly how much more right-wing than any bloody Tory she is very shortly. But she's been very firm, actually, that, no, I represent the sort of institutional majesty of the United Kingdom, and therefore I'm going to use executive powers that the Home Office and the Home Secretary has in order to basically brutalise anyone I don't like.
Yeah. Which probably isn't that good, but she does come across as competent and not, you know, a waste of space.
Yeah. And I mean, like, for example...
The contrast between her and Rachel Reeves, for example, is enormous.
Absolutely. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think her job's a lot easier than Rachel Reeves's job.
Yes.
How do you save this economy? Yes. I wouldn't want that job. I'd much rather be the Home Secretary. Mm. It's much easier to just deport foreigners. But still, they haven't got a handle on the small boats. They haven't got a handle on, like, corruption and the American candy shops and the Turkish barbers. They haven't got a handle on
money laundering, yeah.
Yeah, the money laundering, all that sort of thing. So, anyway, your party went down to zero on this as well.
I forgot about them.
Yeah, everyone does. The Your Party Scotland branch just basically disbanded the other day as well.
I mean, and bear in mind, Your Party is a placeholder name.
Yeah.
They'd never got around to naming
it. No. They did.
I can't make fun of them for not naming it because we haven't actually named this series, but I'm still...
No, they did have a vote.
Oh, did they?
And the vote was for Your Party.
Right. Okay, fair enough.
It was a terrible name anyway. Yes. Azara Sultan Tevron, that's not the name. Oh, okay. Yeah. And then it was voted for as the name. And then the party got zero in the polls. So good prediction from Farage on Your Party. Bad prediction from Farage on Restore. Anyway, so what do you do when everyone is to your right? Well, you have to tack right because these are the genuine problems of the time. And so Reform have posted, and Farage did a press conference on this, Reform will end indefinite leave to remain, stop benefits for foreigners and reverse the Boris wave. So that is just almost word for word Rupert Lowe's rhetoric coming out of the mouth of Nigel Farage's party.
Yes.
And he got kicked out of Reform for that.
Yes. The only thing is, right, Rupert Lowe said it, I mean, going back to our unprompted thing.
Yes.
He said it unprompted.
That's correct.
Nigel Farage has said it after spending, 4 or 5 years now telling us that under no circumstances would he ever do these things.
I'm not for mass deportations.
Until he starts dropping in the polls.
This can't be done.
And he sees somebody rising in the polls who is saying it, and then he says it.
Yes.
Which makes me think that possibly this isn't the most sincere statement that I've ever seen.
Well, like we've always said about Farage, he's always behind the crest of the wave.
Yes.
He's always a follower, never a leader. And here we are, him following once again.
For Blackadder fans, he is the General Melchett of politics. You know, him and his drinks cabinet will be following.
He is, actually. Yeah, he is. Very
12
much.
Miles behind the front line. Yeah.
No, absolutely. The General Melchett of British politics is definitely it, especially as... He just seems to not care about his own men.
No.
At all. Anyway, the point that this made seemed like a good one to people who are not part of Reform. As in, yes, we Restore voters are going to do that. But if you do that, isn't there a price to be paid? Because I can't help but notice that you happen to have the Boris Wave Tories in your party and the Boris Wave themselves as your candidates.
Yes.
So do I think you're actually going to end indefinite leave to remain? I mean, Herald Scotland were like, well, hang on a second. Doesn't that mean that Jenrick and Sweller will be hauled in front of your Boris Wave migration probe? I mean, for a start, do we think that he's actually going to do an inquiry independently on his...
Well, he did say that he was going to do an inquiry into the grooming gangs.
And didn't. And who did it?
Rupert Lowe did.
Exactly.
Yes.
Anyway, as the Herald point out, Zia Yusuf has decided to get tough on all of this. But that means, and Reform sources have told the Express newspaper, that the party would therefore have to be looking at hauling Dame Priti Patel, as well as Sweller Braveman and Robert Jemrick.
And I mean, they were instrumental in the Boris Wave.
Yes.
I mean, Legenrick was literally the immigration minister.
Yes. And Braverman was literally the Home Secretary.
Yes.
Like, her name is on the letters they get when they say congratulations. You're allowed to live in the UK.
So they're gonna have this inquiry, and people are gonna turn up and say, "Well, look, here's a letter from your Home Secretary."
Yes.
Who was also the Home Secretary under the Tories.
Yeah. Suella Braverman, did you sign this? And say, "Well, with an auto pen, but yes."
Yes.
Obviously, I mean, we were issuing tens of thousands of them a day, so I didn't do them all myself.
Yes.
But yeah, stamp, stamp, stamp.
I mean, if you ever get hauled up in front of a judge and your defence is a piece of paper signed by the judge saying that you can do the exact thing that you're in court for, I think you're probably going to win the case.
It seems likely you're going to walk, doesn't it? Seems likely. Anyway, so... Farage has addressed this criticism, by the way.
All right. What did he come up with?
He said that, look, he wanted the inquiry to uncover whether the rise in migration of the period was just sheer incompetence or whether it was done willfully. Well, we know. That's all out there because Boris Johnson has told everyone.
I'm sure there was some incompetence.
He was advised.
But it was mainly deliberate.
He was advised by the Bank of England that bringing in people, the Europeans were going to leave, which they did, and they needed to bring in people in order to replace those people because, as you've pointed out in the past, the Bank of England's calculation for GDP is literally number of people divided by the amount of money.
Mm.
Literally.
Well, GDP per capita, and they assume if they just add more capita, it goes up. And the specific thing they were warning him about was that wages will rise.
Yes. And he wanted the Financial Times to like him, as in big business didn't want wages rising.
Yep.
And so if he just cranks open the floodgates, then yes, the Financial Times writes well about you. That's true. Mm. So again, we don't actually need an inquiry on this. We know it was done with will. It wasn't incompetence, because actually it's quite difficult to incompetently make this happen. Frankly, if you're incompetent, it's more likely that nothing changes, right?
I can believe 300,000 immigration from incompetence. I can't believe 1.4 million from incompetence.
Yeah, genuinely impossible to fathom. It has to have been done deliberately. But he says, quote, of course, there are some that will say, but you've got Sweller Braven and Robert Jemrick in your party. He says, yes, absolutely. If you read what Sweller has written on this and you read what Robert has written on this, they tried to stop the disaster that really started properly in 2021, and that's why they resigned or were fired. Well, I mean, for Sweller, I will actually buy that, right? Sweller, I think, probably did herself want to reduce the amount of immigration. And she eventually was fired. Robert Jemrick did resign eventually, but again, he was overseeing it. But the problem with Jemrick is that he actually seems to have had his Damascene conversion to being based and right-wing relatively late in his political career. Mm. I mean, Jemrick was the immigration minister from 2022 to 2023, and so that means that only 3 years ago, he was like, cram as many Afghans into the country as we can.
Well, and also, when this came to light, didn't he write an article that was basically saying, yes, and I'm proud of it?
This is that article.
Oh, okay, right.
This article was published on September the 4th, 2025. Shall I read some of it?
Yes, please.
Quote, brave men and women like Ahmadullah and his wife are our new countrymen and women. Their children are future members of our armed forces, teachers, doctors, and entrepreneurs.
Okay.
That was, what are we, 8 months ago?
Yes. I'm not very convinced by his conversion, to be honest.
We will do everything we can to ensure their new lives in the UK are happy and successful.
Well, could we occasionally, I know this might sound like a silly idea, but occasionally, could we try and make sure that the people of Britain are happy and successful, rather than trying to make everybody else in the world happy and successful?
Best I can do is make sure that one of them murders you in the middle of the street.
But you can't even do that. Yeah.
Safi Dawood, the killer of Wayne Broadhurst, you remember watching the video of it as it went around? Absolutely brutal. Just stabbing him to death in the middle of the street for no goddamn reason.
Yep.
Guess what year Mr. Dawood was given indefinite leave to remain?
Well, it would be very unfortunate if it was either 24 or 25.
Well, it was 2022 when he was the immigration minister.
Oh, when he was the immigration minister, okay.
So, and then 2 years later, he's still like, yeah, well, I mean, we need to get as many Afghan refugees in as we can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's always about making everybody else, apart from the British people, wealthier,
yeah,
happier.
And the thing is, it wasn't even... for anyone who doesn't know, by the way, Robert Jemrick and the Conservative government smuggled in somewhere in the region of 50 to 250,000 Afghans. We don't know how many, right? And I say smuggled because they literally put a gag order on the media and the courts.
Yes, we didn't find out about it for years.
Yeah, it was in 2025 we found out about it, which is why he wrote his, we need to welcome Afghan refugees. This is a national project.
I mean, and the other thing on him, of course, is I'd note that he's becoming apparently based... occurred only after he had lost the leadership of the Conservative Party.
Yes.
And it had become apparent that the Conservative Party was going down in flames, and that if he wanted to maintain a political career, he had to change his worldview, and then he could go to another party and have a career there.
Remember, he only actually joined the Reform Party when Kemi Badenoch kicked him out.
And that. Yes.
Physically ejected him. Mm. So he was just like, Nigel Farage was like, oh, brilliant. Another Tory.
Yes. I mean, what was he going to do? Go and get a proper job? No.
Well, yeah absolutely. But this one is particularly bizarre because it's like, okay, if Safi Dawood was one of those Afghan interpreters that we had so many tens of thousands of, who had served with the British Army in Afghanistan for, you know, whether you agree with that or not, then maybe you can understand that Jemrick would be like, yeah, okay, he did work with us, we're going to have him in. But that's not the case. He broke into the country in 2020 by hanging on the back of a lorry. So why give him indefinite leave to remain?
Oh, this guy got indefinite leave to remain?
Yes, in 2022. I think under Robert Jemrick.
By illegal entry.
Hard to find the exact date. By illegal entry, yeah.
Other countries, I mean, apart from the mental handful of European ones, other countries would just not do this.
Yeah, there'd be no reason to. You broke into the country... And
try doing this in an Asian or an Arab country.
You'd be mad.
Yeah.
Like, you'd be flogged, probably, and then chucked out. But yeah, so he snuck in on the back of a lorry, and then 2 years later, Jemrick's like, yeah, you can stay. Here's a rubber stamp. So, oh, great. And then 3 years after that, he's like, yeah, I think I'm just going to murder. I'm going to stab three people.
Because the hope was that Safi would have helped keep wages down, to stop British people's wages from going up, and... If he just brutally murders someone in the middle of the street for no reason whatsoever, well, that is a price worth paying to make sure that your wages don't go up.
Yes. That is literally what the Conservative government, of which Jemrick was the immigration minister, thought.
Mm.
That is literally their thought process. Mm. So, yes, that is exactly what happened. And I think it's worth understanding the scale of the Boris wave as well. Someone's pointed out, like, this is just preposterous, right? So these were the ones who were granted indefinite leave to remain out of the 4 million who are allowed in. So there are lots of people who are given...
So the red bar are the Boris wave, indefinite leave to remain.
So the grey bar
is still bigger.
Yeah, the grey bar is the number of indefinite leave to remain grants given from 1960 to 2025.
Oh, well, it doesn't look that much bigger when you realise that the one on the left is 65 years and the other one is what, two or three?
This is the projected number from the Boris wave that could be allowed to just stay, right, after the IRL. So, ILR, sorry. So, as you can see, right, the Boris wave at about 2 million, say, is most of the ILR grants given over the entire course of immigration into this country. Right, it's a huge chunk out of it, and that includes like Tony Blair's government. About half of it, right?
Which at the time we thought was mental on immigration.
Yeah, and that's the ones between in the next 4 years who are going to just be given citizenship.
Wow.
And it's just like, okay, this, like, again, like Charlie points out, like, you just don't understand just how many people this was, right? I mean, you know, 6 million nearly in, you know, a 65 year period, that's a lot, you know. They shouldn't have been doing that, but cranking it up, which is what they're going to do until Starmer is kicked out of office.
But it's still a million a decade, not a million a year.
So it's just brutal, right? So anyway, going back to reform, they're gonna do something about the Boris wave, but are they? Because of course they're gonna have to say, well, sorry, Mr. Jemrick, you were responsible for the Boris wave. We're going to make you the Chancellor of the Exchequer for some reason, and you are a member of the Boris wave, we're going to make sure that you're given political power in this country as a councillor.
Yeah.
I mean, of all the people to defend, right? And I'm not saying this guy's done anything wrong, but it does seem preposterous to be sourcing your political candidates from overseas in the middle of the political event that you're promising to undo. Mm. We're here to reverse the Boris wave. Are you Nigel? Well, who's going to be doing it? Well, Mr. Sorry, what was this guy's name? I can't remember this guy's name. Oh, yeah. Adi Mo Adu Zuzaman. Right?
Why did you not remember that, Carl?
Yeah, I know. It just didn't roll off the tongue for some reason. But yeah, so the leader of Reform UK in Portsmouth has hit back after the party was criticised for selecting a Bangladeshi man. This is the literal BBC text I'm reading. To stand in next year's city council elections. He's here on a student visa. Oh, no, sorry, no, sorry. He has. He was here, I think, on a student visa, but he's got indefinite leave to remain now.
Oh, of course. So, of course he has.
Yeah, I mean, entirely possible that Jemrick gave him that too. And lots of people on social media were like, well, why are foreigners allowed to stand in our elections?
Yeah.
And that's a great question. And I assume it's because in previous eras, like back 100 years when elections started, the number of foreigners in the country was literally so marginal.
It wouldn't have occurred to them to have ruled that out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's literally like John Locke. Like
if we were writing, I mean, maybe we would now, maybe a little bit, but if we were writing a constitution in the year 2000, we probably wouldn't have said, oh, AI agents can't be elected councillors. It wouldn't occur to you, but that could actually be a thing in 100 years.
Yeah, but that's a great point. And not even 100 years. Like, that could probably be a thing relatively soon. Mm. We have literal robots standing for election.
I mean, I'd probably prefer them, to be honest, but...
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I have a much better relationship with ChatGPT. Yeah. But that's the point. It just wasn't in the mind of people at the time. So anyway, another thing that's interesting about this is that Reform are not necessarily committed to Farage, right? Now, this is not the only polling on the subject, but Restore did a poll through Find Out Now, I think it was. And one of the things that was revealed was, who would you most prefer to be the Prime Minister from 2024 Reform UK voters? And less than half of them said Nigel.
Sorry, this is only sampling Reform voters.
Yes.
And a third of them said Rupert Lowe.
Correct.
And only half of them said Nigel Farage.
16% were like none of the above.
Like, we 1%. That's an interesting category. The 1% that said, I'm going to vote for Reform, but I want Keir Starmer to be Prime Minister. That is intriguing.
I want to meet the 1% who said Ed Davey.
Yeah, what's going on there?
Do that many Lib Dems want him to be the Prime Minister?
At least none of them said Zach Polanski, so that's encouraging.
That is, yeah. And Jeremy.
But when a third of your own supporters want somebody else to win, that tells you something, doesn't it?
It shows you that the decline in the polls is organic. You've done this to yourself.
And what are Reform in the polls at the moment? Like 25%?
24%.
So 30% of that. So they've basically got like another 7-8 points that is just waiting to go over to Restore.
Yeah.
Which combined with their existing 4 points, that puts them at 12%.
And then you get the kind of rush effect, which is what happened to Reform, where everyone's like, oh yeah, no, this party's collapsing, they're not going to win, I'll just go for
the if Restore go from nothing to 12% in the space of a year, which...
would be incredible.
Yeah, but it looks like it could actually happen.
Yes.
The momentum of that.
Well, one thing we've been saying is we don't think Farage is the kind of guy to stick it out till the grim end, right? So however it ends, it won't end with Farage because it'll go down to like 15% or something and he'll just be like, okay, fine, I'll quit.
And then who do you hand over to? You can hand over to Richard Tice, who is a charisma vacuum.
Zia Yusuf.
I mean, is that going to work, really? Is that going to work, Zia Yusuf? Are you going to hand it over to Robert Jenrick, who Mr. Boris Wave?
Couldn't even get elected in his own Conservative Party.
Yes.
Like they chose Kemi Badenoch over him.
Yes. So as soon as, and Farage, a lot of people dislike him, which kind of places a cap on him. And even his own supporters, a lot of them want Rupert Lowe.
Yes.
So when he goes...
it's going to collapse. Yeah. It's going to pancake.
Yes.
And honestly, that's fine because that works for us. But it also is interesting how he is losing to the Greens already, right? So the Greens recently won a by-election. Because a Reform councillor was given a 12-month prison sentence for being controlling or coercive to his wife. I don't know anything about it.
A Reform councillor was?
Yeah.
So he could be Bangladeshi then, and it could just be normal cultural practice.
Well, this was in Thanet. Right. Now, Thanet, for anyone who doesn't know, is still a leafy, normal part of England.
Okay.
Where Nigel has failed to win seven times.
Yes, he kept on trying to run for MP there, didn't he?
Yeah, I don't know why he kept choosing Thanet. But anyway, so yeah, I mean, like, percentage white British, 83.6 in the 2020 census, 7.2% Muslim, and only sort of 10% non-English speaking. So it's mostly a white British area still.
Oh, wait, okay, so it could have been the bad kind of abusively controlling your wife, and not the kind that we permit.
Not the politically correct kind.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, but this goes to show that even in the majority white British areas that are doing quite well, I mean, I suppose is why they're doing going to the Greens. But this goes to show that actually the Greens are not just the student vote.
No.
Right.
No, good point.
And so Rupert Lowe, his tack towards, young people are getting a really stiff deal here and we need to help them, is actually far smarter than Farage's, I'm triple locking the pensions and you're literally going to be sucked dry like a vampire.
If you are already going to vote for me, I'm going to lock down your vote.
Yeah.
And while trying to shed everybody else.
Yeah. That's it. Very peculiar. Anyway, so yeah, he got 39% of the vote. This, and it was just a local council.
So 39%, wow.
Yeah, he got 39% of the vote as a local council election in Thanet. So, I mean, you can't count the Greens out, right? Because they're running a good propaganda campaign, if nothing else. And so you really have to give them their credit on this. Labour have actually done some things that are all right, but they've failed to communicate it.
Yes.
They've completely failed to
communicate. They don't even seem to bother, even their wins.
Yeah, no, they don't make a big deal.
But mind you, all of their wins are things that don't appeal to their own MPs.
Yeah, their right-wing wins. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, it's good to checkmate the Conservatives and Farage, but that's not where the Labour vote is going.
Yeah.
And this is a point that people have been making and saying, well, hang on a second. Look at what the concerns are in the country, right? The economy, 55%, which most people share, literally 55%. But immigration is the second one at 47%. And the only reason that the economy has gone above immigration is because of the Iran war and how things are going.
Right.
Right. The squeeze has been continual since COVID. And so the economy has been, where is it? The red one, right? Yep. The economy has been a big deal, especially during the COVID years and after the COVID years. But the immigration thing has been really persistent because, Boris, because we thought with Brexit, immigration was over, right? That's what people generally thought. And no. Oh, no, there are loads of, oh my God, it's mental, right?
Yep.
So immigration and the economy, two intimately connected issues, as we saw from Boris's.
I mean, I'd have a hard time picking between those two.
Absolutely.
It depends on what mood you catch me in as to which one I answer. Yeah.
Depends whether I had to pay a bill or I got got stopped in the street by some foreigner. Yeah. Right? But the point is, as you said, they're intimately connected. These people were brought here to depress your wages.
Yes.
They were brought, like, these are the same issue. Mm. They're just two sides of the coin. There's the right side and the left side of the coin.
I mean, you could just combine them and put it under the system is rigged against you.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so Farage decided, I'm going to go for the boomers and their pensions. But the Zach Polanski types are going for the economy. They're saying, no, we're going to make it rip off Britain is a good slogan because we are in rip off Britain. Mm. And him saying, well, it's the mysterious absent billionaires that are doing it. In a way, yes, but not in the way that he will ever admit, as in it's the billionaires pressuring the government to bring in infinite amount of foreigners to exploit for cheap labour. Mm. So all of these things are connected, but the Greens can only speak about one half of the subject. So if Rupert Lowe and the Restore Party can speak about both sides of the subject...
Well, that's a superpower.
It's magic, and the young people in this country are basically voting Green because I think... purely economic reasons, right? So that's how Britain would vote by age. 33%, as you can tell, by the 70 plus are reform. 69 to 36% reform. 59, 31% reform. So this is pension voters, right? People who are like, no, I either have my pension or I'm getting it soon. I'm voting for it.
That anecdote by Harry that he shared on the podcast the other week, I mean, that was golden. When he met that mate of his.
Yeah.
Who said, yeah, I'm voting for the Green Party. And then after that, he said, oh, and by the way, I found your Twitter and I agree with everything. I mean, it's a young man who is right-wing,
he just
agrees with all the right-wing stuff, but he doesn't have an offering on the right.
Yeah, He just knows the economy is screwed.
And look at 70 plus.
Yeah.
It's a competition between the Pensioners Party and the Pensioners Party in slightly different colours.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is buying a Ford Cortina, and you've just got down to the choice of what colour you want it in.
2/3 of 70 pluses, and nearly the same with boomers, are voting pensions.
Yes,
that's just it. This is literally all we do. We vote for our pensions.
So, the question for Restore is: do you want to come along and be the third right wing party competing for 15% of the population, 10% of the population? Sorry.
Yep. But look at the young people by. Conversely, you've got the Labour and Greens, so that's half of them, more than half of them, nearly 2/3 of them, saying, I need some money from the wealthy. I need some sort of wealth redistribution. I need the boomer grandparents to give me some money. Now, it's either going to be done by the state stealing your money, or maybe you could sell your big house so I could buy it, and you could move into a 2-bedroom bungalow and have a nice, comfortable life on the rest of the earnings. But no, for some reason, the boomers are locking up their properties. And that means that the young are just like, well, I'm going to have to turn to the government then.
I mean, stamp duty really doesn't help. I mean, the government
hasn't helped this
process either.
It doesn't. Yeah, I mean, one of the things that Kemi Badenoch promised was to get rid of stamp duty. Ooh. Great idea.
Yep, that's a good policy.
Great idea. Brilliant idea.
I mean, they can't because it's 12 billion a year and they're already running a massive deficit. So you're going to have to cut something.
I'm in favour of cutting a lot of things.
Well, yes.
So, you know.
Yes.
But you are right. They can't, you know. But you can see where the younger people are like, no, we need some kind of redistribution here. And the older people are like, we refuse to do any distribution.
Well, I mean, actually, to be fair, an older person might hear that and think the young people are being commies.
No.
There is redistribution taking place right now.
The other way.
The other way, yeah.
Yeah, your triple lock vampirism is sucking their wealth.
So let's pick a peak boomer year, 1956. If you were born in 1956 and you're the median of that generation, of that cohort, £300,000 gets transferred by the state to you over the course of your lifetime. What we are doing is we're taking money from the poor and giving it to the rich.
And I saw some numbers in there. I hadn't verified them, but it was something like for every pound a boomer has paid, they get paid £1.20 by the state.
Yep.
So it's literally you are getting more than you ever put in.
Yes.
And you're getting it from the young people now who are in a terrible economy, who are having their wages deliberately depressed by mass immigration.
Yep.
And all of the other, you know, the petrol prices through the roof, energy prices through the roof because of Ed Miliband's crazy green stuff and all this sort of thing.
Yep.
These guys have nowhere to go. They're desperate. You can understand why they'd be desperate.
And I know people in the comments will be pushing back and saying, oh, actually, UK pensions are lower than the other G7 countries. Yeah, that's because in this country, you get a blend of cash and services.
Yeah.
You just get, I mean, the NHS, for example, most of its budget is pensioners.
Yes.
So the proportion that we spend on that 10% of the population is the same as other G7 countries. It's just not all cash.
Yes. And this is, just to be clear, the wealthiest cohort that have ever lived as well.
1 in 5 of them are millionaires.
Yeah.
And the next, so the top quintile of millionaires and the next quintile down, it's like 900,000.
Yes. Exactly. That's not like, you know, and then 4 out of 5 are on, you know, 13 grand a year or something.
The median, median has a net worth of £500,000.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong, good for them.
Yes.
But it's time to think of yourselves as part of a civilization now. And
yes,
your grandchildren are really having a hard time.
And the proportion of people who are married and a homeowner by 30 used to be 50% in 1960, and now it's 5%.
Yeah. So come on, guys. Yeah. You know, you've got to be honest about what's going on. And, you know, I'm not saying that no boomer could ever have a pension. You know, means test it. If your current, you know, wealth and your monthly income is below a certain threshold, yes, you get a pension. If it's above that, no, you don't get a pension.
Do it for the bottom quintile.
Yeah.
Because they've only got a net worth of 150 grand.
Yeah, there we go. That's fine. Totally happy with it. Everyone, you know, that way you don't have to be a vampiric generation upon the young and everyone wins. It would be good. Anyway, so like you were saying, there's definitely scope for a sensible right-wing party to say, no, there needs to be an accord here, actually.
Yeah.
Where we help out the people who need helping and on both ends of the spectrum, frankly, and those people who don't need helping don't need helping. So let's get on with it.
If you're a millionaire, you should not be getting benefits, and that's the current situation.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like the fact that 53% of the country are net beneficiaries of the state and not taxpayers is just mad.
Yep.
Anyway, so the point being, no one was really happy, right? Tom Howard actually made a good point here, which I'm loath to say, which is everyone's taking a plunge, basically.
Oh, the dotted line is zero.
Yeah.
Everybody is underwater.
By a long way. And even like Zach Polanski's on minus 19, because the thing about Kimmy Badenoch, Ed Davey, and Zach Polanski is that most people don't know who they are, right? And so when you get this, you've got a sort of like, you know, their 20 or 30 supporters, percent of supporters who will be like, yeah, no, I really like them. And then sort of like 20 or 30% of people who are politically engaged, like, no, I hate that guy. And then you've got about 30-40% in the middle who are like, I don't know who that is.
Yep.
And the more exposure Zach Polanski is getting, the more he's going down. But then the more Kemi Badenoch gets, the more she's going down. Ed Davey's gone down. Nigel Farage is, you know, always been down, really. And Keir Starmer, of course, is literally at the bottom of the ocean. So, yeah, nobody's happy. Nobody's happy with any of this. So assuming things carry on as they carry on, mm-hmm. I think that your prediction that it will be Greens versus Restore in 3 years' time is going to come to pass. Right? I do think that's a good prediction, and we can see the signs already. So let's assume that the country is made mostly of sensible people, and they say, yeah, okay, we're going to vote Restore. We get Restore government. Well, what can we actually do? And the answer is a lot, because a lot of precedent has been made recently.
What are you thinking of?
Well, let's talk about some precedents. So stripping citizenship is a precedent that has been made recently for someone who is not a terrorist.
He was a policeman, wasn't he?
He was a former policeman, that's correct. Seems to have married, he seems to be a bit of a Russia boo. So he married a Russian woman, moved to Russia, got Russian citizenship. He's been...
Well, fair enough, people travel all over the world.
Yeah. He's been arrested at the airport a few times, interrogated, had his devices taken. But he's never
on account of marrying a Russian girl and living in Russia?
Yeah, on account they assume he was like some Russian asset or something. But they've checked all of his devices. He's never been charged with anything, let alone convicted of anything.
Yeah.
And Shabana Mahmood, for some reason, has just, quote, in the interest of national security, revoked his British passport.
Wait. So we can just take a passport off anyone we like for not actually committing any crime or doing any terrorism just because we want to?
Yeah.
Well, that's going to come in handy.
Yeah, it is. And what's really, I'll read some more of this, because this is really fascinating. This is an incredible test case, right? So, former policeman, so not some sort of like doped up loser or something, right? Former policeman, right, okay. He'd been on Russian exchange programs where the Russians send a policeman over here and we send a policeman over there.
Oh, so we germinated his interest in the first place?
I don't know, possibly.
Right.
You know. But we, this is a chap called Mark Bullen, so just Englishman, right? Had his British passport revoked on information which would not be made public in the interest of national security, according to Shabana Mahmood. We're not going to tell you why we did it.
Okay.
But he's not been charged with anything.
Well, I can think of 15 million people for whose passport I might want to take away.
For reasons I'm not going to be made public.
Yeah, and I'm not going to tell
you why. In the interest of national security.
Yes.
But it's also kind of sinister, because now you have a native-born Englishman who was deprived of his citizenship by a Pakistani Muslim woman.
Yes.
I mean, that is a very concerning.
I mean, I get a similar feeling whenever I come back through Heathrow or Gatwick, and the people who are checking to see if I can come in can barely speak
English.
Oh, the
Boris wave. Literally the Boris wave.
Yes.
It's just like... But this is the Home Secretary, who, again, a very right-wing thing to do. So it sets an interesting precedent. You are being deprived of your UK nationality on the grounds that to do so is conducive to the public good, says Shabana. Great.
Okay, I'm making a note.
Yeah, that's a great
That's the
reason.
Wording you use.
It's just, we're not going to tell you why. It's conducive to the public good.
Yeah.
That's right, it is.
Except it'll actually be...
It will be when we do it, yes. Whose public good? Bullen shared the letter online, because he was just like, he messaged him saying, is this a joke? Because, of course, he hasn't been convicted of any crimes. He was the first person to be stripped of his citizenship in relation to suspected links to the Kremlin. The only other high-profile recent case is Shamima Begum, and she literally was a Muslim woman who joined the Islamic State.
When she ran off to join head choppers of British soldiers.
She was a morality enforcer for ISIS as well. She used to run around with an AK-47 right. enforcer.
And that's equal to some guy who got the hots for some tall, leggy, blonde girl.
So among us can yes. say otherwise. Yeah, that's exactly it. He said, they sent me this document and they said you can appeal the decision, but the trial will be closed and secret. We won't show you the evidence. You won't know exactly what you're accused of.
We can do that.
They're doing it right now. They're doing it right now to an Englishman.
So they basically just armed us with everything we need to fully reverse not only the Boris wave, but we could go back to 1997 if we want to with this precedent.
Go back to 1948 if we wanted to. We could go back to like Henry VIII's black trumpeter, reasonable black man, if we wanted to. There's no statute on any of this. They've literally just handed the right, the ability to denaturalize everyone in the country, keep it secret, and then just fucking deport them.
I think Shabana Mahmood deserves a Christmas card from me. This is fantastic.
But isn't? I mean, that is just mad. The nature of the country now, though, right?
Yes.
The trial will be closed and secret, and we won't show you the evidence. You won't even know what you're accused of. Right. The right to face one's accuser,
well, yes.
is a core principle of English justice. But of course, like with David Lammy and the jury trials, which in fact we'll get to next, actually. I mean, David Lammy wanting to get rid of jury trials. Why would he care about a core tenet of English justice? He's a Tuareg man, as his book Tribes tells us. Shabana Mahmood is a Pakistani Muslim woman for whom Islam is the guiding principle of everything she does, as she told us. Well, for me, it's the Magna Carta and the English judicial system and legal system. This is the guiding principle, I think, of how my country should be operating under.
But, I mean, under reciprocity here, a native English man can strip a Pakistani woman and a Ugandan man citizenship.
What's their argument against it?
Well, given that they've been doing it themselves the other way around, yeah.
Exactly. But not only that, given how they gave reasons so broad
yes.
that we could just cite them back, it's conducive to the public good, Mr. Lammy, Miss Mahmood.
Yes.
It is conducive to the public good.
But we're not going
to
tell you what that is.
We're not going to tell you why.
Yes.
We're not going to show you any evidence. We're not even going to tell you what you're accused of. But trust us, it's conducive to the public good. And so we're going to do it. That's where we're at now as a country. Like, isn't that just mad? This is just mad. But this is...
But all the same, thank you very much for the precedent.
Yeah, exactly. If you can do it, then we can do it. This is the country we live in, and when we gain control of it, this is what you get. I mean, Mr. Bullen here says, it's like East Germany, which it is, yeah. An undemocratic country, no lawyer, no phone, no water, a nice cold room. If someone had described the situation to me when I was working in the police and asked, is this allowed? I would have answered, of course not. No. It's illegal, but now it is. Again, he was a former police officer. It's not like he's some, you know, like bomb-throwing jihadi.
Yeah. Like, it's not like he's an ISIS enforcer or anything.
Yeah. Mad, isn't it? A Home Office spokesman, though, said, quote, deprivation of British citizenship is a vital tool used to protect the UK from some of its most dangerous people, including those involved in terrorism, hostile state activity, or serious organised crime.
Well, which of those is he? Oh, we don't know.
I assume hostile state activity, right? But who? What community is involved in serious organised crime? Well, the trafficking of young girls to be pimped around
yes.
the country, to be raped and pimped around the country, well, that's serious organised crime.
Mm.
And as Rupert Lowe said, if that means entire communities go, then so be it.
And millions, in fact.
Yeah. So, yeah, the next thing that they've decided is they want to scrap jury trials, which,
yep.
I mean, I think is abominable. Like, I really, on a spiritual level, I hate this.
This deep. I'd rather lose my vote to right to vote than lose jury trials.
Gotcha.
Because they can just come for you for any damn thing now.
Yeah. And apparently they don't have to tell you what that thing is. And all of these laws, by the way, they're putting under the Conservatives. So thank you.
Doesn't surprise me.
Thanks, Conservatives, yep. for that. Like, again, brilliant. But then you've got other structural things that they've decided, no. Okay, so the legal system, the way the government connects to citizenship, we can do whatever the hell we like there, which, okay, great news for when we win, right? Mm. But the next thing is the electoral system itself, right? Remember, they have given 16 and 17 year olds the right to vote.
Yep, they can just change that whenever they damn well want.
Oh, we can just mess around with the right to vote, can we?
Yep.
Oh, brilliant.
So step one, we win the election. Step two, we change voting to only being people of...
Net taxpayers. Just change it to net taxpayers. So that way...
Yeah, actually, that would do it, yeah.
Yeah, that way, sorry, boomers, you're not net taxpayers.
Mm.
There go your
public
votes.
Sector.
Public sector, gone.
Yep.
Right? Unemployed, gone.
Yeah.
People who literally contribute nothing to the country, gone. And we'll see what actually a participatory democracy looks like.
Yes.
Right? People who are actually holding the system up, what do they want?
Mm.
And what will that do? That will incentivize people to become the kind of person who holds the system up and not be someone who drains out of it. And you know, and at the end of the day, if you're like, no, I'm just going to be unemployed, fine. I'm just going to be on my pension, fine. That's totally fine. We just don't care about how you think the country should be run. Because as we saw from the goddamn boomers, we know you just think, give us more money, right? We know you're just voting for your pensions.
Yes.
Right? Okay, no.
We're not accusing all boomers.
No.
But yes.
But two-thirds
yes.
are just voting for their pensions. And it's like, okay, fine. That's fine, right? So we can now just through executive fiat, as in... not even through executive fair, through passing just any bill we want, because of course the representation of the people bill. Okay, we'll just repeal that and replace it with...
Yeah. I mean, this wasn't in the manifesto, no, was it?
We're literally going to call it representation of the taxpayer bill.
Yeah.
Right? No, of course this wasn't in the bloody manifesto. No, there was scrapping jury trials.
Yes.
No, there was denaturalising Englishmen. Right? None of these things were in the manifesto. But
we're just going to do it.
Yeah. Representation of the taxpayer bill. The right to vote is contingent on 5 years of contiguous tax contributions that are greater than benefits deductions.
And this is the thing, right?
How could it be more fair?
I mean, what did they always say about Henry VIII when he was a young man?
He was an absolute stallion.
Yes. But I think the phrase they used was, if the lion understood his own strength.
Yes.
Which he came to. He started to realise... Damn, I can just do things.
Oh, yeah.
And this is why they work so hard to make sure that everybody who gets elected is a containment vessel.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they get one government, just one government that isn't containment...
It's over.
Yeah.
It's over. They're never...
The entire post-war liberal project will be gone.
Yeah. And that's our mission, just for anyone wondering.
Yeah.
We've got to do this. And the thing is, okay, so you've got... Extending the right to 16 and 17-year-olds. I mean, like the left will make arguments like, well, you know, a 30-year-old man going out with a 22-year-old woman is exploitative because her brain isn't fully formed until she's 25. But I definitely want her voting at 16.
Yes.
It's like, no, that's obviously the government just trying to take advantage of morons, right?
Yeah.
Well, what about foreigners voting in Wales? In January 2020...
Do they even need to be in Wales or can they just do this straight from Lagos?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
In January 2020, the Senate passed a new law that means if you're 16 and over and a resident in Wales, then you can vote in the elections. And this, in 2021, was extended by law to local government elections. So it's not even just the devolved Parliament of Wales. Now it's all local government. If you are a foreigner living in Wales, you get to vote in their elections for some reason. Sorry, like there is... Yeah. A failure, I mean, you can only assume that they're doing this because they think this will keep us in power forever, right?
Mm.
But in the average British voter's mind, there is a failure to understand that your vote is power. Your vote is you as literally
well,
Radcheck.
That's why they want to dilute it as much as possible.
Exactly. As Radcheck points out in Starship Troopers, that is you exercising force over the state. Mm. The power of selection still does reside in our hands. And that's why, as you say, they're trying to dilute it as much as possible. Well, if we can just weaken the British public by increasing the number of foreigners and the number of morons, the number of people who are just literally people who gain from the state and not give, then we can... rule this land forever, even if it just declines and degrades.
Right? I mean, a way of looking at it is that democracy is just a good proxy for civil war. Bigger side still wins,
yeah.
Except we don't have to do all the argy-bargy and the shooting.
Yeah.
You know, we just decide, okay, bigger side wins.
But the problem...
There you go.
The problem in democracy being a proxy for civil war is it assumes two armed combatants.
Yes, which basically means men who are capable.
Yeah. Because if we go back to our...
Yes.
This is not proxy for civil war, because 60-plus-year-olds are not going to pick up rifles and fight with the 20 to 25-year-olds or whatever, right? And the half of this electorate is women. who are not fighting, right?
And, so and nor are the immigrants with incredibly low grip strength going to be much of a...
but not only the ones with incredibly low grip strength. The literal foreigners who have got absolutely... where is it? There we are. Who've got absolutely no investment in the country. They're not going to pick up a rifle for the country either.
Right? Although the moment this country has its comeuppance on the economic side and the welfare side,
they're just going to...
They're gone.
Exactly. They're not going to fight for it. You see the viral videos all the time of just some, you know, ethnic minority youth in London or wherever. It's like, would you fight the country? Oh, no, this is my country. And it's like...
Yeah, they say it themselves. Yeah. This is not my country.
Yeah.
Their own words.
And so as a representation for civil war, but done peacefully, actually democracy is not operating very well.
No, because it's been diluted.
Exactly. And exactly. It's been extended to cohorts who would not be involved in the struggle, right? Mm. And so, okay, well, actually, a modern proxy for that is, are you paying your taxes? Mm. That is the modern proxy for it. And therefore, those people who don't pay their taxes, why are we hearing their opinion on these things? Mm. Actually, they're not involved. They're not involved in the struggle. They're not upholding the state. Why should they have any say in it? And, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, I as a voter, because I don't get any bloody benefits, I'm happy to hear their opinions, but when I go to cast my vote should be powerful because I pay a god-awful amount of tax. Yeah. So my vote should be bloody powerful, you know, proportionally.
If we can have tax bans, why can't we have vote bans? The more tax you pay, the more votes you get. I don't know.
There's absolutely no reason why not. And if all of these things are just up for, we're just going to pass another law, we're just going to change it. We're just going to change, because I mean, like, 18 being voting age, foreigners not voting, these are long-settled assumptions of democracy. We assume that means that this democracy belongs to the working people of the country. And, okay, maybe we'll extend it to 16-year-olds because maybe some of them work. Most of them obviously not earning more than paying more in tax than they take in benefits. But, like, who cares, right? Like, they're at least going to grow into it because they're our children. But to be like, we're just allowing foreigners to vote. It's like, right, what you're saying is this is not our country. This is not our democracy. This is not our state. This is just for anyone who just happens to rock up here on a boat.
I mean, what they want is just rubber stamping the existing power structure.
Exactly. And it's precisely that. Mm. And so, no, we are at liberty to change all of this because they've changed all of this. And remember, they're proud of their mass deportations, right? They'll just come out and say, we've deported 60,000 people. No, they didn't. They deported about 8,000 people. And 52,000 people just voluntarily left.
Right.
So they just asked them to leave and they're like, yeah, okay, fine. But
I'm glad you clarified, because otherwise I'd assume that they just the 8,000 just came back again on another boat and they just shipped them back and he just went back.
Well, do you not remember the one in, one out where it was the same guy going around to France? That happened like two or three times. But the point is, they're proud of their mass deportations. Like, no, we've got 60,000 people out. It's like, great. So we all agree that Nigel Farage is wrong. Mass deportations are possible in this political environment. We have all of the executive tools in the government to do all of these things.
The British state has long established that it is a good thing to do this.
Absolutely. We can denaturalize anyone we like. Doesn't matter if they were born here. Doesn't matter if they are ethnically English. Mm. And we don't have to tell them why. And we can just change who can vote in the next election. So we're not worried about the Greens, like, getting all the 20-year-olds. Yeah. We don't need to worry about that, right?
Well, and also, I don't know if you're going to cover this, but we can censor and arrest anyone who disagrees with this as well. So
we can,
we probably wouldn't even bother doing that. But the point is, they have built us an incredibly coercive toolkit that the moment that we get hold of this,
we can actually solve the problems.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In a year.
So anyway, basically, you can just do things. The British government does just do things. And if Nigel Farage is offering any of these sorts of things, I think that he wouldn't be failing in the way that he is. And just to finish off, like, 3 years is a long time.
Mm.
It's a long time in politics, especially now in the age of the internet, where, like I said at the beginning, the tectonic plates are shifting, things are changing, and people are hardening, right? Mm. I mean, I meet lots of regular people who are not involved in politics, don't know who I am, and I hear them talking, and they will just talk to me, and they will talk to people around them. I hear these conversations happening in real life, in like the Co-op or the Tesco's.
Yep.
And people are like, God, did you go into town today? Oh, it's awful, isn't it? Awful.
And especially younger people. Because I mean, my whole life I've been hiding my power levels amongst normies because it's just easier. And sometimes I hear a group of younger people talking. I'm like, bloody hell, there's the power.
Oh, yeah. They're well aware.
Yeah.
So all I'm saying is when we win, it can be done very quickly.